We have a podcast to get to. Hello there, everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another exciting edition of Music Video Land, the Music Video Land podcast about music videos and other music video related topics, brought to you by your super incredible good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database, the one and only at IMVDB.com. My name is Adam Fairholm, co-founder of a previously mentioned site, and then with me, as usual, from one of the coldest places, judging by the amount I hear people complain about it, New York City, United States of America. Doug, how are you?
Super good, Adam. It is cold. It snowed on me today.
Oh, no. There was an awning I hoped to run into quickly.
I mean, I just had to walk all the way from one place to another through snow, and it was on, and it got on me.
Well, you know, we all got to make our, living in New York is tough.
It's so tough. But the great thing is when the snow gets on the garbage bags, it's beautiful.
I remember visiting in one winter in New York, just the snow over the garbage bags. So many Instagram pictures. You can find those on my Instagram.
Adam's Instagram is very active.
So for the three people who are left now after hearing our classic banter, I know you guys want to just go on forever, but we have an actual podcast to get to. And I'm really excited about this podcast episode because we have a director that we wanted to talk to for a while. And he's a really awesome director, Mr. Robo Shobo, also known as full name Robert Schober. But he goes by his directing alias, I guess you'd call it, Robo Shobo, which as far as aliases go is a fantastic alias. And it, you know, combines his first name and last name, so it makes sense. It's not like he's going by like Mr. You know, Mr. Super Cool Guy. Although, if any of the directors go by that, then we're not going to discriminate. But Robo Shobo has directed some really amazing music videos. Most recently, in 2013, Hollow for Alice in Chains. He has directed two of the music videos for The Killers' holiday charity Christmas singles for Product Red. Most recently, I Feel It in My Bones.
It's safe to call it a series. I think
you definitely could call it a series, yes. Also, Stray Heart by Green Day, as well as some fantastic videos for Mastodon, including Oblivion and Sleeping Giant, and Na 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 by My Chemical Romance, which is a fantastic video from early 2010. So we are going to talk about those videos, as well as a little bit about effects.
Throw the Pearl.
What's that?
Curl the Burl.
That's right. Hold on. How could we forget Curl the Burl? This is two demerits over here on this end of the podcast. Because if you haven't seen any of these music videos, which you probably have seen a few, before the interview, you got to go see Curl the Burl. Also for Mastodon. But we're gonna talk about those videos. We're gonna talk about some effects, practical versus visual effects, plus a lot of other things. It's a really great interview, so stick around for that in the second half of this very podcast right here.
You also get to find out where that name came from, why he started using it. It's a great story. Listen to all of that stuff. But you know what else, Adam? You know what? Something we also talked about a little bit with Robo Shobo, and that's his tendency, slight tendency to incorporate space into some of his music videos.
Yeah, if you go through his canon, this is something that I kind of immediately, noticed. It's very noticeable when you're looking at, his videos all in a row. Look at Hollow by Alice in Chains, which definitely reminds me of one of my favorite movies, Sunshine. If you haven't seen that movie, I highly recommend it. Also, Oblivion by Mastodon. A few of these other ones, these take in the concept of space and do something with it.
Yeah, not all of his music videos take space. Not at all. Space, but there, it definitely is a theme that he definitely explores. No pun intended, because you get exploring and space. Anyway, I think before we get into this interview, in the first half of the show, we should talk a little bit about space music videos.
That's a great idea, because...
How about that, right?
That's almost, yeah, I think that's a great idea because, you know, space is, I mean, well, Doug, we grew up in Florida, home of Cape Canaveral, home mm-hmm. of NASA. So I grew up in, you know, really being fascinated with space, being fascinated by space travel. I watched all the space movie, you know, 2001, you know, the sci-fi ones like 2001 and like Total Recall, as well mm-hmm. as, you know, like The Right Stuff and all those kinds of movies.
There is a lady with three boobs in Total Recall. Do you remember?
I do remember that, yes. There was also a lady with three boobs in Come On, Let Me Ride Your Bicycle.
That's true.
That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a theme that you know, in any visual media, and in really any art, you know, think of like literature, I don't know, poetry, why not? But so we're going to, you know, there has to be a theme, you know, occurring in music videos somewhere. So where is it? If you think of it off the top of your head, it's kind of hard to pull down. Like, oh, what are the music videos I've seen that incorporate space?
Well, I think it's at the very top of this conversation. It's important to get into this, and that is just recently, like within a week or two ago, there were a little bit of rumors going around that Jay-Z and Beyonce are planning on shooting a music video in space. Is that do you believe that?
Well, NME, and we'll put the link in the show notes here, is reporting this, and NME apparently, we have like two other articles where like an artist is like, I want to do it, and it always follows a pattern. Artist wants to do a music video in space, and they're trying to get Richard Branson to do it.
Yeah, immediate calls like, oh, you want to be a music video? Call Richard Branson. That's your music video space guy, and that's because he's got Virgin Airlines or something has rocket ships or spaceships or something. I don't.
Well, there's Virgin Galactic, which is not launched yet. But anyway, but you know, there's never been a music video filmed in space, at least to my knowledge. So this was just kind of hearsay. This is from the January 12th, and the source says the label people have been talking about making a music video in space. Beyonce and Jay-Z seem the obvious option.
Obviously, yeah. because of all of their space references in their music.
Right. I look at them and I see like two total space geeks.
Yeah, seriously. They spend all their time just stargazing.
And the quote ends: everything is being done to make it happen. So everything possible. So I do not take any stock in this story at all. But
it's funny that it pops up, and I think personally to me it seems like the least likely thing to ever happen in the world of music videos.
And the source for it appears to be The Sun in the UK, which is like the National Enquirer in a way over here. So, but it's, you know, it's there that is one barrier that has not been crossed, but one barrier that has been crossed several times is the idea of like of faking it in space. And it's worth noting that the highest budget music video of all time, and of course I'm forgetting the number here, but
$7 million,
directed by Mark Romanek, Scream by Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson.
And this is early 90s, $7 million, right? Is that not, that was $7 million at the time, I believe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They have not, what do you call it, prorating it? They have not prorated it.
Yeah.
They have not converted it for inflation or anything like that. That is just it's a number that gets floated around a lot. But that does take place in space. Remember they're playing ping pong in space and stuff.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that budget went into making the sets that look like outer space and that kind of thing.
Right. I hope that's where it went into. I think in a music video, I hope the Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson are not getting fees for performing in their own music video.
No, but I think that there's a lot of you know, choreography and makeup and some visual effects and stuff
Oh
too.
yeah, definitely. Especially for the, you know, the time it came out in the 90s. But you know, and then, you know, recently we have videos like I think, well, we'll just say that that video is fine. I mean, it's famous for being a Mark Robotnik
Expensive.
video and being expensive, right? But and I think space plays a pretty big role in that, right? I mean, if they were just like hanging around in like a Arby's or something like that, it wouldn't be as wouldn't be as fun.
It'd be great for Arby's. It's like
But
they constructed the largest Arby's ever. It cost
they're like
$7 million.
smashing guitars at Arby's. I would pay to see that. But then we have even, you know, more recent. I think Doug, you brought up a good example in the show notes here, and that is a song that was kind of space alien themed, and the music video to go along with it. And that is E.T. by Katy Perry and Kanye West, directed by Floria Sigismondi.
I think it's Sex Monday.
Well, there you go. It's not like we have a podcast where we talk into a microphone. We're expected
No.
to know. But this one was interesting because I don't know. I love the Teenage Dream album. I think it's a fantastic kind of almost classic album in a way. But I think this song is just such a miss. And the music video is so serious. Have you seen them? It's just so like there's not one like shred of humor. It's a beautifully shot music video, shot by Jonathan Sella. But it is just it takes itself so seriously. But there's like an alien in it, and Katy Perry has all this makeup and stuff like that. It won a bunch of awards.
It's got so many makeup.
It's got
So
so
many.
many makeup, yes.
And another one that's pretty recent, and this video is absolutely wonderful. It was one of my favorite videos from last year, and that's Diplo Set It Off. And the concept of this video is just a giant stripper pole starting from Earth and just going into outer space. And along the stripper pole is just, you know, seemingly thousands of strippers if you're thinking logically, which this music video absolutely does. So yeah, tons of strippers all the way up into outer space. This is directed by Ryan Stake, I believe that's how you say his name, and shot by Aaron Grasso, and just a wonderful, spectacular, creative stripper-filled outer space video that also came last year.
See, that's a completely different type because I mean the Katy Perry video, we're talking about like actual alien concept design and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, sure. This happens to actually just end up in outer
It's
space.
just yeah, the stripper pole goes up so far that it's in space.
Well, a few that do kind of have like an intergalactic kind of feel to them that come from a little bit further back, but also are really great is like Missy Elliott's "Sock It to Me" featuring DeBrat, directed by Hype Williams. And this is back when both Missy Elliott and Hype Williams were making just fantastic music videos, and this one is you know a shining example of both, yeah, kind of features Missy Elliott kind of in a video game style outer space scene, and she's like fighting space monsters and that thing, and that's another one that's really great space themed music video.
Well, I think there's, you know,
Ninety
there's
seven, ninety ninety, 97 it came out.
just surprise information.
Ooh, 97, we know that too. It's 4 minutes long.
another good one, it had 1 million shares yesterday. And I think there's different kind of sub-genres of the space, right? I think, and a lot of times space is taken very seriously, like in Scream or like in, especially in Katy Perry's E.T. song. But another area that's really fun is when an artist in a music video takes space and has some fun with it. And one of my favorite examples of that is I Believe in a Thing Called Love by The Darkness, I think around 2004. I remember this video coming out very distinctly because this video came out right around the time that iTunes started not selling but showing music videos. I don't know if you remember that in the beginning you didn't buy music videos off iTunes, you just watched them. And they didn't even have them categorized at all. There was just a big list. I remember I was a freshman in college and you'd just like sit down and just watch these music videos on iTunes and list.
It's like
And
Here's these. Here,
Yeah.
here's these.
It's like, here you go, kids, enjoy. And this was like always like near the top. And it is, you know, this and the song obviously is kind of a bit of a self-parody. And the video is too. It's absolutely amazing. And one of the images that I think people always remember is the lead singer, I can't remember his name, but getting out of a space pool and having it like this big furry purple monster dry him off. And
Yeah.
when I think about space, that's what I think about.
Big furry giant monster.
Yeah, drying me off.
Drying you off.
Yeah.
Being constantly soaking, dripping wet. Weird.
But at the end, there's like a big space octopus. It harkens back very much to the, you know, like the space TV shows of the 60s and 70s. You know, lower
Yeah.
budget ones like Lost in Space. Not Lost in Space, but you know, Star Trek and all that.
I definitely like it a lot when the funny ones. I mean, there's definitely some great examples of some that are a little bit more serious, and but the ones that are a little bit campier and that don't take space so seriously, I definitely tend to favor those because it's so, like the Katy Perry one, just so difficult to pull a serious outer space video off. I mean, I think that Robosobo is great at it, but yeah, I definitely tend to favor the funny ones as usual.
Well, I think, yeah, and that's a great point because the space-themed music videos, and I think Hollow by Alice in Chains is a really fantastic version of this because this is a really, really well-done music video and it is extremely serious. It is, I get, you could probably put it in the category of drama, probably. And like I said, it reminds me a little bit of some of the themes of like Moon or Sunshine of
Is
Isolate.
Moon the movie with who's in Moon?
Well, let's look at IMDb.
Copiers.
Yeah, who are these guys? Yeah, Sam Rockwell, right. Okay, yeah,
It's a really
Duncan Jones directed it.
good movie.
It's a fantastic movie, and it you know deals with those themes of isolation in space. But this is, I mean, this is a music video that takes on you know a really dramatic subject matter in the span of a music video and is establishing it does you know really complex things like establishing characters, establishing you know environments and some you know narrative form all within the span of a few minutes. And this is you know one that is serious but is really entertaining and really comes off right. So I think Robosobo knows when he's adding the space element to a music video that he knows what he's doing.
It's a tough thing, I think, to do just starting off. You have to have a name for yourself, kind of like Robosobo. It's a start from an outer space setting. It just like seems kind of off the wall. It's like, all right, we're gonna start in outer space for this music video. You're gonna have a helmet, and it's like it just seems like it's such like a batty place to start. So it definitely takes the right kind of execution to get it right in the funny version or the not funny version. But yeah, I think that was a gr I think it was a great conversation we just had about
Oh my
space.
God, I'm oh, so good.
It was to the
It's
moon.
ending now.
Yeah, this is us wrapping up and now
Wrapping it up, and then now here we go
transition
because
interview.
you just heard us talk about Hollow by Alice in Chains, and now we are going to talk to the director of Hollow by Alice in Chains, as well as m many others. Now, before you listen to this interview, I recommend that you watch "I Feel It in My Bones" by The Killers, "Straight Heart" by Green Day, definitely "Curl of the Pearl" by Mastodon. Watch that, and also show your friends. Probably "Na Na Na" by My Chemical Romance. You can find Robosobo's page, which has all the videos that he's directed as director of videography, in the show notes for this podcast episode. That's all you got to know. So here we go. This is our interview with Robert Schober, also known as Robosobo.
Robert Schober. I've directed a lot of videos also under the name Robosobo. I do music videos. I also work like as an effects artist.
And I was wondering about, you mentioned that you do direct under the name Robo Shobo, and I was wondering where that alias came from and why you decided to use an alias for directing sometimes.
I don't know. It was a nickname that just kind of stuck. Like I did pretty well in school, but my attendance got pretty bad at one point, and I had to take some classes over the summer, and this girl kept referring to me as Robo Shobo, sort of taking my first and last name and sort of condensing them phonetically, and I kind of liked it, so it just became like a nickname that stuck for a long time.
And when you started, you know, directing music videos, have you seen is anybody confused by that? Because you're the first director we've actually interviewed that uses an alias for a single person. Has that ever caused any problems, or you see more name recognition with that?
People have such a hard time spelling my last name. Like, there's a C in it that's silent. So I thought Robo Shobo, it's very phonetic, and, you know, it's spelled like it sounds, mm-hmm. Which is one reason I did it. The other reason, I think I think my reasoning behind it at one point was just there were all these collectives out there doing videos under these names, and that, you know, because I was doing some motion graphics and animation and some of my work, that maybe I could pass myself off as a collective, and maybe that would be better branding for myself. It was just kind of a stupid idea that then just has sort of lingered for no purpose now.
So they would hire Robo Shobo, then one person would show up, and they'd get mad and say, "We thought you were two people."
Yeah, exactly.
So. And, you know, one of the, you know, in watching your videos and kind of looking at all of them at once, we wanted to talk to you about and see what your thoughts are on space and this science fiction / space genre in general, because we notice a lot of your videos deal with that or some of them deal with that in some way. Are you a fan of that genre, that kind of science fiction / space genre?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like science fiction. I don't think I've meant to make so many of them. I think it's just become one of those things where, you know, the budgets are fairly challenging in videos. Like, you approach a video a certain way, and by the time you're done with it, you know how to do it better. And so I just kind of was like, you know, a couple of these, you know, I've wanted to reapproach it, you know, slightly different way, or see if I could do it better. I think that's probably why I've wound up doing so many, you know, maybe use less green screen this time and try to do more of it practical, or, you know, things like that. So.
And you mentioned that budgets can be a challenge, and I'm curious, does that kind of continue to be a challenge for you despite kind of working with the level of artists that you're working with now? Is our budget still kind of a challenge to work with? Are there still kind of stuff that you do that's considered a passion project?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I feel like most of it still is. You know, the projects get bigger, but I think the budgets, you know, continue to be somewhat challenging, for sure.
Like, even when you're working with an artist like Alice in Chains or Green Day, that budget is still kind of challenging you to figure out what to do with that amount of money.
I mean, yes, but let me just say, the budgets are always challenging, because I think it's just inherently I think most directors have the impulse to go, I have this much to work with, I'm going to try to make it look like this much more, you know. Mm-hmm. I think there's always just sort of an impulse to try to, you know, really, you know, not optimize what you're going for, but just completely maximize you know, your return on investment. So,
And how do you do that when you're working with I guess we'll take the example of Hollow from Alice in Chains. Which has, you know, it kind of reminds me of the, you know, Moon, the recent kind of science fiction film, but it seems to be like when you're working with a small budget, like space or like that kind of aesthetic is something that is, you know, so high budget that it would be difficult to pull off with something lower budget. How do you kind of bring those two together, like a budget that is a challenge and something that has to look convincing for a video like that?
Sure. Definitely working with like a very resourceful or creative production designer, I think is one thing that helps with that. Jason Guzvardi did art on that, and that guy's amazing. He can make things out of just the most random things. So I think that's one of them. We're lucky enough that, you know, there's a couple of, you know, pre-built space station sets around the Los Angeles area. So that definitely helps.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then, again, like I do my own effects. I was able to do a little bit of green screen here and there and do some graphics and enhancements to the piece, which I think gives a lot of production value back to it as well.
And I've heard other directors who also do their own kind of VFX work, and they kind of describe it as a gift and a curse. Like, it's good that they're able to do it and they can keep, manage budgets by taking on the work, but at the same time, they end up taking on so many additional tasks by doing the VFX as well. Do you run into that as well? Kind of, it just becomes a huge project kind of from start to finish for you because you're kind of relying on yourself to do those VFX?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, like the first videos that I started out doing, were mostly green screen, and I was trying to do like all of my own effects and trying to do them on very small budgets. And, I would get kind of frustrated, like you definitely see your own limitations, like yourself as like, one person, trying to deliver something like that, like in 2 or 3 weeks or, 3 or 4 weeks, whatever. And it's definitely nice when you can step away and, have a team of people working on it instead. The past year or two, like I've tried to do, more and more of the work that I do in camera, like more of the special effects in camera too. Like I'm a really big fan of doing practical effects where I can. I did like a video for Mark Stormer of The Killers where, we had like this guy sort of like re-inhabit like his clothing and, sort of built like an inflatable suit, or like with Green Day this year, we were talking about, if we were just going to throw tracking points on this guy's head and put like a CG heart on his body, or if we were going to try to tackle it practically. And that was really exciting to actually build like an animatronic heart. Creature Effects did that for me, and those guys are just amazing.
I was wondering why that effect works so well. That actually is an actual heart that you guys built that you put on somebody's head.
Yeah, that's that is a real heart. It was such a cool experience too, because I photoshopped together kind of like, I think the head's going to be about this big. I kind of wanted it to, look roughly like this. And the first meeting that I went in to see it, he had already basically mocked it up in clay like that morning, like in a few hours. And it looked really, really good. But it was about a third of the size of what I wanted it to be. And so I was kind of like sheepish and reluctant to sort of say, this is amazing, but I thought it would be a little bit bigger. And he grabs like a wire off the table. And this guy, Don Lannon, he's amazing. He, he like sculpted Predator. He did like the, like those sort of gelatinous corpses from the X-Files movie. Like, he's just this like legendary guy in the industry. And my friend Julie Hapney, who's this amazing makeup effects artist, like, you know, help me pull that together, because she's over at Creature. But yeah, he grabs like a wire and just slices the top of the head off, and he's like, okay, just go wander around the shop and, you know, come back in like 10 minutes and I'll have it rebuilt just like you saw it. And I came back and he did, and it was awesome. And yeah, so it was made out of like a sort of a translucent silicone, and then like this incredible, and I'm sorry for forgetting his name right now, but like he's anytime you see like an animatronic like reptile or fish or anything on in a film, like, this is probably the guy that they went to like have it finished. Like, he just, the paint job on it is amazing, and then they, you know, put like KY jelly on it to make it like really slimy, and they put servos inside of it. So Julie had like I thought it was really cool, because like when I was a kid, like my grandpa would fly like model airplanes. Mm-hmm. And so they basically, they just have like, you know, like a model airplane, like a remote control rig, that they use to puppet it. So it was actually pumping while it was on the guy's head. So, you know, like when, you know, the guy pops into the apartments and the guy like hears him for the first time, we're able to like make his heart beat really fast to like kind of show him panicking and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
Was it, was the actor able to breathe in it?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. I was a little nervous, but it's actually got eye holes in it too, which, you know, I was worried I was going to like have to like track and paint them out for the video, but they were kind of like hidden in the crevices of like there's like a crease on the front of it, and they don't even show up on camera. It was great. So he was able to see, you know, we had a couple PAs like always, like, you know, 4 or 5 feet away from him, and kind of, you know, having them like follow their voice, but it turned out fine. He never tripped or fell. There were no injuries accumulated on that.
That's always good when you have a zero injury count on a set. You don't want anybody tripping and falling and ruining the heart headpiece as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, for a video like that, for Green Day, you know, that came from the second album of their series, the Uno, Dos, Tres series from 2012. And, you know, with three albums, there was, you know, a large amount of music videos that they're making in that time. I was wondering what amount of involvement, when you have an artist that is, you know, releasing a large amount of material like that, what amount of involvement do they have in the video? Or did you have any kind of contact at all with Green Day and what they wanted, or were you given sort of free rein?
I was given pretty free rein. Devin Sarno, who is just one of my favorite people in the world, favorite commissioners for sure. He reached out to me and, you know, asked me if I wanted to write on this, and I threw my idea in, and they were into it. But no, we didn't have we weren't in contact on that. You know, I got notes back. But they were in London at the time, so it was actually, you know, I was working on the video, you know, and then uploading it, and then they were taking a look at it, and then I was getting feedback like the next morning. So actually worked out kind of nice, like timing wise, to do it that way.
It's interesting that you mentioned Devin Sarno over at Warner Brothers, because and that's actually a note on our notes here, because we notice he's commissioned frequently on many of your videos, and you mentioned you have a really good relationship with him. Is that unusual to have a good relationship with a commissioner like that, or are there others that you kind of have a tight relationship with as well?
No, I don't think so. I have a really good relationship with Tom Osborne as well. He's over at Epitaph and commissions for Anti. You know, I worked for him over at Warner Brothers as well. I think you just start to, develop a rapport with, you know, if you have a good experience with the label, you're going to continue to work with them.
And so that's kind of been the, is that kind of how it works out? Do they reach out to you directly to for that stuff now, coming directly from the commissioner? Does it still kind of go through a production company for that?
I mean, it just depends. I mean, I was with a production company for a long time. And then I was at Doomsday for a while. And then I was working for like a sort of a small, boutique agency that I sort of, took some time off to try to, you know, work with to get off the ground. And during that time, I kind of just, you know, I didn't completely stop doing music videos. I think I did like maybe one or two that year. But was more focused on working on like experiential stuff and doing like lifestyle videos or commercials.
So switching gears to another music video that we, you know, you mentioned more in-camera effects. This is one of our absolute favorite videos for in-camera effects, and that is Curl of the Burl by Mastodon from 2011, and we love this video a lot for, and if you've seen anybody who's listening, you know why. And I was just wondering, you know, it's such a you know, an amazing concept and old execution to follow, but the concept is so interesting. I was wondering where did that come from, and what sort of, I know you have directed videos for Mastodon before. I was wondering, is that a video or a concept that comes out of having, you know, a really kind of comfortable relationship with an artist like Mastodon?
Yeah, but it also, I mean, first of all, let me just say, like, I feel so lucky to have that with those guys that I've been able to, you know, it's always nice to become like a repeat director with an artist. And those guys are just, I mean, they're the nicest people, but like they're so, you know, they're twisted and they're creative, and that you know, a lot of that came from Bran. Same with like Divinations. You know, he was like, he's like, we want to find a caveman, and we want it to kill us and eat us at the end of the video. And I'm like, fuck, it's great. Yes, let's do that. And that's, you know, kind of the genesis of Curl the Burl was, just trying to, actually what happened, like Bran was talking about, he was watching some show, that was about a guy who, like, first of all, I didn't really know, like what a burl exactly referred to, but I guess it's a weird growth that occurs like in a tree, like it's a knot. That forms, I guess maybe it's almost like scar tissue that sort of becomes this big twisted malignant thing inside of a tree. I guess woodworkers like pay a premium for them because they can do cool shit with them. He was watching, it was like a documentary or something, that was about a guy who was like a meth addict, who would just go out into the woods and, you know, just, you know, cut burls out of trees with a chainsaw and then go to town and sell them, have his money to buy, you know, some food and meth. And then, you know, we'd get fucked up for a month at a time. And then when he ran out of money, he'd go back out in the woods and pull burls out of trees. And so like he had this like incredible image of like he was like, he's like, I want this guy to turn into Paul Bunyan. And, I want to see him like snorting sawdust. And he kills the sun. I'm like, okay, great, awesome. So, you know, spun a really cohesive narrative out of those elements.
It's not just any Paul Bunyan. It's like the iconic kind of Paul Bunyan, the statue Paul Bunyan. That's what I enjoy about that.
Exactly. Yeah, I actually, I think that turned out great. I actually was, I had tried to push to do it like he was more of like a troll like mutant. Like I did these like photoshopped sort of like pieces where like he had like, you know, like this sort of like massive nose and like oversized ears. Like it was, I don't know. I was kind of inspired by like Paul McCarthy. Like he kind of does these like super super grotesque kind of like prosthetics for like some of his video pieces and stuff. And I was trying to go a little crazy with it, but we wound up going with the more classic Paul Bunyan.
And obviously with the two videos that Adam and I have brought up so far, Curl the Burl and Stray Heart, they're definitely we definitely have a taste for the humorous style videos. I'm just curious, is there a different approach that you take towards a humorous video than you would a video that isn't like funny like that?
I don't know. No, I guess not. I guess I spend more time just sort of like going too far in one direction or another, you know, trying to brainstorm, humorous or interesting scenarios. You definitely spend a lot more time coming up with ideas that never make it into the video when you're doing one like that, versus like the more serious pieces, because those seem to just sort of, those evolve a bit more organically and they kind of know where they're going. So
I wanted to talk a little bit about or ask a question about, we're always interested in stuff we've never seen before, and we came across this for the My Chemical Romance Na 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 video, and I was wondering if you're aware of it. It's from MTV, and it is a quote-unquote pop culture cheat sheet.
Yes, I saw that.
I guess that... leads to your answer a little bit of were you involved in this were you involved in this at all? It's a really interesting piece for a music
video.
Wait,
like involved in the article?
Yeah, in the article, yeah.
No, I was shocked when I saw it. I was like, shit. Like I was really impressed by like, how many little jokes and Easter eggs were kind of crammed in there that they picked up on. I think I even caught like the, because like one of the ideas was like, I always liked like in Terminator 2 where he like, hacks the ATM or whatever, and we like did that with like the gun vending machine in the piece, and I think they even like caught that reference.
So they caught them all, every reference.
They found like the, there was like the, what, there was the, and this wasn't one that I was involved in, this was like the graphic designer that My Chemical Romance works with, there was like a closed sign that was on the gas station that says like "Wake up, time to dine," but it looks like like a "Yes, we're open" sign. It was really cool. It was like a Rutger Hauer and Blade Runner.
Oh, they do have that here. I can see that here. Nice. And they do have the Terminator 2 hacking in the ATM.
Yeah.
It seemed very comprehensive.
Yeah, they did their homework.
And for a video like, going back to the Hollow Alice in Chains, I mean, do you have that in the back of your mind when you're working on videos, most of the time or even some of the time, or are you in a different frame of mind, or maybe the, references that you're looking at are coming up later, or when you have references in there, for other videos, how early in the production process does that start?
What do you mean? Are you talking about like the self awareness of referencing other material, or?
Yeah, like I'm thinking of like when I was watching the Oblivion video for instance, it kind of reminded me like a little bit of, or I could see references to 2001 or like Total Recall or some other videos like that. When you're writing a treatment for a video like that, are you referencing other other films, or are you just describing what's happening?
I usually don't. I usually just try to reel them in with a story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to like Photoshop together like a style frame or two. Like I try to like Photoshop like a scene from the video. I remember like I basically like took some used over like some used footage from like Divinations, and like, you know, photoshopped them like into spacesuits and photoshopped like these like really cool kind of like space station backgrounds together, and like was really trying to, you know, sell them on the concept. So actually, you just reminded me, like the Oblivion video actually kind of evolved conceptually. Originally, what I had pitched to them was that there was like this sort of like a space siren. There was like this woman like in a red dress, like floating outside of the space station, like luring them out, and they would like take off their helmets and like try to kiss her, and that's when they would, you know, realize that, you know, they were boiling in the vacuum of space and asphyxiating. But I think the reason we didn't do it was just because they were like, you know, we have wives and we have wives and girlfriends, and you know, they might not be cool with us, like, you know, kissing a chick in outer space. So,
see, I'm thinking like, you know, modern films, and you're going all the way back to, you know, ancient Greek literature and things like that. That's a whole different level of reference.
Well, I think I think though that I might have been inspired by. I'm not even sure, like, if it's from Outer Limits or The Twilight Zone or what, but because I've never seen the episode, it just, the idea came from. Do you guys know this band Manor Astro Man?
Do not know.
Okay, they were like a surf rock band from like Alabama, and they kind of sort of had their peak like in the late 90s, but like amazing. I'm really obsessed with any band that like puts on costumes and like creates like some sort of like elaborate backstory for themselves, and they were kind of like this, like, you know, classic sci-fi or whatever, but anyways, they had, it was all surf rock, and but they'd have lots of like audio samples in it, and one of them was this guy kind of like wanting to leave his spaceship because he could hear this voice outside of the ship. So that's kind of where the visual came from, was like this like random like audio sample that I'd heard in the song. So yeah, so I didn't go quite as far back as classic mythology. It was actually more of a, you know, a television show repurposing, you know, a mythological concept, and then it being, you know, sampled into a song that I later sort of conceptually appropriated. So
I'd like to see MTV do a cheat sheet for that. And right, then put, yeah, and then be like, there's a sample from this song that we're pretty sure that's where it's coming from.
So the inspiration's like 10 steps removed. Like, it's just a complete simulacra of itself.
I wanted to ask you about, we're big fans here of The Killers' annual Christmas song/music video. And you have been, am I right, you've been involved in two of these on the music video side.
Yes, I'm flattered that they asked me to do another one this year. So,
and these are really entertaining. They're awesome. The last one was "I Feel It in My Bones," and the all the proceeds from the single goes to charity. So I was just really interested from your perspective working on these. It seems like on both the song level and the music video level, I mean, all four of the members of The Killers are in it. They seem to just be having a lot of fun. It's sort of toward the end of the year. It's a Christmas time single. Is it different shooting a music video like that than it would be, you know, shooting a single for a band off of one of the regular albums, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, they're definitely, you know, those Christmas videos are, you know, they're incredibly small budgets. Which, and they should be, because, you know, the it's for charity. They're trying to make as much money as possible, you know, for Product Red. And so, you know, we have a lot of great people who help out on those. You know, we've had, you know, great production companies that donated their time. You know, I've worked with some really cool DPs on those. Sean Connery and Sing Yam shot those two videos. And, you know, Panavision helped us out this past year. Just want to thank them again. They're awesome. And this post house, Dirty Robber and Coyote Post that I work with have helped out both years. And the crew donates their time. We go out to Vegas, it's amazing. Jordan, who's the assistant to their manager, basically just made phone calls and got us those places.
Nice.
Most of them donated. Like this year, and Harley Davidson in Las Vegas gave us a motorcycle. We had to give it back, but people are so incredibly generous. Like I think there's a bar called Dino's that's kind of a classic establishment in Vegas. Let us go into their place and shoot. Somebody gave us their house to shoot in the El Dorado Mining Canyon. Let us use their amazing gas station and just all of that beautiful just the desert around there. That was all their property that we shot on.
That's great that everybody donated their time. That's obviously not typical for another video. That's just because it was a charity for Product Red.
Oh, exactly. No, and that's the thing. It's like I try to get as much production value as possible out of these things. And so, we're definitely, just getting amazing, amazing deals and amazing things from people just sort of out of, out of their kindness and generosity and enthusiasm for what the project was and what its intentions were.
And I hope you guys got a good deal on the smoke machine as well. We're big fans of the smoke machine in that video.
Ah, the guys were actually in London at the time. So I had to sort of get somebody to lay in a bed and then kind of like sort of mock up like a lighting scheme and get them to sort of like act out like what we wanted them to do, like shut on an iPhone and then send it to them. And Giorgio Testi is the name of the guy who shot the second unit for us, the performance part of the Feel My Bones video. So I just kind of put together like lighting references and shot something on an iPhone and sent it over to him. And then, they went and grabbed the stuff and pulled it together. So
you seem to run into a lot of instances where the artist is in London. Green Day and the Killers. It seems to be a repeating pattern.
Yeah, that's true. So
sorry, that was a completely useless observation. But I'm really bad at telling when artists are like there for the rest of the music video. Like, for instance, when I saw I Feel It in My Bones originally, it just doesn't connect with me that all the guys from the Killers are not in any of the other scenes. I just imagined like when they're shooting everything, like Brandon Flowers is like right off camera going like, yeah, this is great, I approve.
Always.
Yeah, I just have a very warped sense, I think, of what goes into a music video, which is why we do these interviews, to bring ourselves down to earth a little bit, to figure out how it really happens.
Bring us down to earth. Man, you were saving that.
I didn't realize that was until you went, man.
Until I reacted, man. Well, I'm surprised you weren't saving that, but I know there's something that you are saving.
Is that our pick?
Yeah, P.O. Dubs. It's still a pick to the week, even though, and you know what? People have voiced disappointment that we've gone to every other week for this, and in this case, every 3 weeks. but people say they miss hearing us silky smooth gentlemen.
Oh, who said that?
I won't make them publicly say that they liked us, but they have.
Okay.
They've said to me that stuff that I just said to you.
Should I go first? Or?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So for my pick of the week, this may be an easy one, but I gotta go with it, and that is YOLO by Lonely Island featuring Adam Levine and Kendrick Lamar. Now, as you may know, the Lonely Island, which are Andy Samberg, Kiva Schaefer, and Norma Tacone, have been gone from Saturday Night Live. Norma and Akiva have been gone for a few years now. Andy Samberg, this is his first season away. And so for the Adam Levine hosted episode last week, last Saturday night, they came back and did what they're famous for, which are these, you know, digital shorts, music videos. I think the most famous ones are you know, the music videos, like I Just Had Sex and Lazy Sunday and the ones like that. So now it turns out they are actually coming out with a new album, which I am excited about. And so they premiered this one. The musical guest was Kendrick Lamar, and Kendrick Lamar appears in the song and the music video. So the reason I'm picking it is because of Kendrick Lamar. I think that the song in general and the music in general is fine. It's a little lackluster, but I've never. It's always really interesting to me when like somebody comes and just like steals a show of a music video. I think we're used to seeing it like in like movies and I don't know, stage productions maybe, but for a music video where somebody's just like comes in and is like, I'm gonna save the whole thing. I think it's fun and interesting. Kendrick Lamar definitely does this. He plays like accountant. The whole concept of the video is, you know, they're talking about things that are safe to do because you only live once, instead of doing reckless things because YOLO, you only live once, like the statement popularly alludes to. So he's talking about, you know, doing things like you know, getting a mortgage instead of renting, just all these sort of like common sense accounting things. But as Kendrick Lamar does, he's a really fantastic artist, so he really brings a lot to the track and the music video. One thing I found really funny, which I'll put in the show notes, is Forbes.com actually did a rundown of all of Kendrick Lamar's recommendations that he made, financial recommendations, and kind of objectively evaluated them. And they found that there was a little bit of, renting, saying that renting is for suckers, which Kendrick Lamar does in the song and music video. It apparently is what got us into this housing crisis, so probably, you know, not the greatest thing to be on national TV, ripping up a piece of paper that says rent, getting everybody's head all in a twist about don't rent, buy a house. But anyway, they went through these and kind of came to some conclusions about how true Kendrick Lamar's recommendations were. So anyway, my pick of this week is YOLO by Lonely Island featuring Adam Levine and Kendrick Lamar. And I'm still working on my Kendrick Lamar impression. It's getting better.
It's not ready yet. I'm surprised that you... we're just considering that people were actually going to be taking advice from Kendrick Lamar in this rap song, in a song that also includes Andy Samberg saying, "Don't go into saunas because they're full of piranhas." you know, I think that Kendrick's safe of any people suing him, saying that he gave them bad financial advice, or certainly a double dip recession. I think we're clear of that stuff, but. Great point, Forbes, either way.
Way to go, Forbes, stealing, you know, going for it.
Yeah, way to take jokes too seriously, Forbes. it's interesting that you picked a Lonely Island music video, because I, too, was planning on picking a Lonely Island video, but my Lonely Island video, my pick, also ties in with our space theme. How about that? Stuff.
Now, is this the one I think it is?
Well, if you're thinking of the Lonely Island song about space, it is. This is Space Olympics by Lonely Island, also an SNL digital short. Definitely one of the more alternative avant-garde style comedy.
This is actually my favorite Lonely Island of all time.
What an amazing song and an amazing video. It just is like a little bit. I guess SNL gets into this area a little bit of like this, kind of like weird, like almost uncomfortable kind of like low rent humor a little bit. It definitely started popping up a lot more in these digital shorts. But yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite Lonely Island music videos. Essentially, it's the Space Olympics. Andy Samberg is not rapping at all. He's really just kind of singing, really letting it fly. About the rules and the regulations and the comings and goings of the Space Olympics. And there's one key moment in this music video that always gets me, and every time I watch this music video, I like forget that it's coming, and then it surprises me, and it gets me laughing every time. There's a part where Casey Wilson is like handing her pee over for a drug test. And obviously the song lyrics coincide with it. And then as she's handing her cup of pee over, it just Andy Samberg shouts, "You're a winner," and it like comes up on the screen like with her hand holding like the little cup of pee. And it's just like that type of humor that really gets me. And I guess it works for the SNL audience too, because it aired. But yeah, definitely one of my favorite, like I said, Lonely Island videos. Space Olympics, Doug Klinger pick of the week.
Now, you have to remember two important things about this music video. Number one, it came out, you know, the Summer Olympics in Beijing were right before the start of the season. The premiere, this was from the premiere episode of that season right after the Olympics. So people had been drilled for months, not just about the Olympics, but about sort of like there's always this kind of like infrastructure porn that comes through the Olympics, like how much does it take to like do the Olympic Village, how you know all the costs involved in building all these structures and things like
that. How many condoms they have there.
Exactly, yeah. People get like really into this kind of stuff every 4 years and they completely forget it. And then Michael Phelps was the host for this show. But so the thing that I think was really genius about this, it was that it started off with this completely lofty language that is often tied to the Olympics, like you know, you're competing in space for the Olympics, and then it just sort of like one by like little by little gets mired down in these like ridiculous details about like how you get
no
like,
one could be there,
like all the like you're gonna get a junior suite and you can't use the minibar, just like all these like stupid things about it, and then it starts to get in what you're talking about, the kind of like the more of like the avant-garde thing where all of a sudden they're talking about how it's probably not a good idea to hold a sporting event in space because there's no light or sound, and they talk about all these things that are canceled. It's by far my favorite Lonely Island song.
Everything is canceled. They have the whole song about a canceled Olympics. It's so funny. Yeah, it's great. It's great, and it's full of the cast members too. Just the one thing I love about, will forever love about Lonely Island music videos on SNL is they'll always get like key SNL cast members to just like stand there as a guy who like just puts a label on his shirt really quick and that's it. Like getting these people who like in 2 years are like starring in movies, but for this particular purpose, he's just like a guy standing there who gets like pee dumped on him or something weird like that. Just so funny. But I'm surprised you didn't go with that one. But YOLO, also a great pick, although non-space related.
Sorry about that. So I think that's it. There's our episode, our once every 2 week episode. Now, at the end of the episode, I'd like to give a shout out to a new feature on the site.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really cool one. And we just released it as a beta because we're still kind of working out some of the secret sauce stuff here. So just beta, let you know that you may see some crazy stuff going on, but basically on every single video now, at the bottom, you will see a chart, and this chart tracks some interesting data. It tracks how many times people have shared this video on social media, because I think, obviously, in this, I sound like a local newspaper columnist now, in this digital age, you know, that's a good metric of popularity. We're trying to get some other data in there, like YouTube watches and things like that, mashing together APIs and all sorts of fancy stuff. But you can see, you know, like Google Plus, Google One, you know, shares, Twitter, tweets, and it breaks it down into Facebook, like comments, likes, shares, all things like that. And you can see it trend over time. We started tracking at the beginning of 2013, so you can kind of see trend lines going up. And we track as soon as a video is added to our database. So if there's ever, you know, if you're looking for a reason, if you're like, oh, why should a certain music video be in the database? And this is the first of a bunch of features we're releasing that are answering that question, is because we are taking this giant pool of data that we're building and we're doing some interesting things with it. So now this is just a very basic thing, right? This is just like a chart that you could look at. That's because, you know, a lot of the legwork has gone into, you know, how do we aggregate this data and, you know, where do we store it and things like that. So we figured that out and now we're kind of moving along with that. So it's really easy to look at. Just open up literally any video of the site, scroll down, and you'll see it right there.
And you will enjoy it.
I mean, we should do thank yous at the end. Thank you to RoboShobo for appearing on our podcast. It was awesome. So,
and thank you to Outer Space for providing much topic for music videos.
So we'll see you guys next time. That's why it's a beta.